Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 10 of Footmarks. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, and with me is Jared Kimber. Of course, in this podcast, we discuss his work, and he wrote a piece on Moeen Ali. And so I've decided to call this episode Moeen the Anomalous Ali, and there is a reason for that. Now, prior to the Old Trafford Ashes test, only 15 players in the history of Test cricket had combined for 3,000 Test runs along with 200 Test wickets. During the Old Trafford test, Moeen Ali became the 16th. Now, Jared, if I look at the list of all of these players, some of these players are absolute legends for their nations, right? You've got Imran Khan, Kapil Dev, Ravi Ashwin, Ian Botham, Richard Hadley, Gary Sobers, Jack Gallis. The list goes on and on. And
I'm going to stop you. Who's the worst player on the list?
I'm going to have to go with maybe Stuart Broad, actually, because I don't think he's an all-rounder.
Well, he's the worst. He's the worst. All-rounder on the list. I'm not sure he's the worst player on the list, which is, you've got Chaminda Vaas, Daniel Vettori, and Chris Cairns are probably, before Moeen Ali, the three weakest players, right? Those probably. Are not weak players. Like, they walk into most teams around the world. It's ridiculous how good this list is. And Moeen Ali just doesn't feel like he should be on that list.
Yeah, no, he looks like an absolute outsider, but of course, like, Moeen does have that record, so it must be recognized. But what I'd like to point out over here is that Moeen Ali is someone who's played an awful lot of Test cricket, right? England play an awful lot of Test cricket. So just because of that, Moeen has played more than a lot of more talented players would have for their respective nations if they didn't particularly play for England. You have a very good comparison in your piece with respect to Moeen and Jason Holder. You compare those two guys where if you look at the average differentials, Jason Holder is in the positive because slight positive because he has a better bowling average, as you would imagine, than Moeen, even though he has like 50 less wickets and 4 less games. And then his batting average is 2 more than Moeen. Moeen's average differential is in the negative, but when you look at these two players, Moeen has the better numbers. So you call him a counting stats player, something along those lines. So talk to me a bit about that and the comparison between Holder and Moeen.
So I think with Holder, the kind of player he is, and I think Holder's fantastic, and obviously I've written about him many times, so this isn't anything against him, but Holder spent a lot of his career batting at number 8, right? He's not going to get as many runs as Moeen is in that position. He's eventually moved up to 6, right? I think De Silva's batting at 6 now, but he has batted at 6, and they weren't going to bat him at 6 before they went with De Silva. And he bowls, but he tends to still bowl a little bit more fifth bowlery times because when the conditions are in his favour, he can bowl forever. But when they're not, he still is probably a little bit too slow for international cricket. Moeen is going to be bowling for you. If he's in your team, he's going to be bowling quite a bit. We especially know that when it's overseas. We know how little Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad bowl overseas. So Moeen's going to get a huge kick there. He's a spinner. So he's going to bowl more overs than a seam bowler is anyway. And with his batting, wow. I mean, he's batting cards all over the place. But, you know, at no stage are you going to have Holder, you know, opening the batting or batting first drop unless, you know, it's for fun. Whereas Moeen's batted everywhere. And so by counting stats player, what I mean is if you're looking for the most efficient all-rounder in the world, quite clearly that's Aubrey Faulkner and everyone else should get out of the way. But, you know, Holder's quite efficient. But a lot of his career, he has not produced as much cricket stats as Moeen Ali has. But Moeen Ali is far less efficient. So I think there's about 10 runs difference or 9 runs difference on their average differential. So it's not small, right? Mm. But the difference is that with Moeen, every game, you know you're going to be getting a ton of overs out of him. Mm. And that because of that, you're going to be getting more wickets than Jason Holder's going to get out of each game. And then the other side of things is because his batting can go all the way up to open or batting at number three, again, you're going to get a few more runs from a similar amount of games to Jason Holder, even if Jason Holder still averages a couple more runs a game more, just because a lot of what Jason Holder did was down the order. Not that Moeen hasn't done that as well. Moeen's batted everywhere from 1 to 9. So it's a bit crazier with that. But that's what I meant by counting stats. And this is a counting stat, right? Mm-hmm. No one is saying he is the 16th best all-rounder of all time, because neither you or I would really say that, I was going to say Brett Lee, that Shane Warne or Stuart Broad is an all-rounder. And they're both on this list. They're on this list because they both played over 100 test matches. And so they made enough runs to get onto this list. Mm-hmm. So that's why I talked about the counting stats. Whereas Holder is a much more efficient, effective all-rounder, but because of the way he's been used and because of the kind of player he is, he doesn't have these kind of stats. And I went through the list. You probably have it in front of you. Tony Gregg, Keith Miller, Trevor Bailey, Vinu Mankad, whoever else I put on the list. Ravi Jadeja isn't on this list yet, right?
Waseem Akram isn't on
this list. Waseem Akram. Yeah, that was the really big one, isn't it? So there are really, really good players who are not on this list. So it is a peculiar list from that perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, on a similar note, of course, you can't just, you know, not acknowledge 3,000 runs and 200 wickets. It is a remarkable feat, and Moeen Ali should be, you know, celebrated for that. So judging by that, would you say that average differential is a flawed metric, perhaps, to judge the value that an all-rounder adds?
Yes. I think in general it's flawed because it doesn't take into account, I think, one of the most important things, which is usage. And that comes back to what we're talking about with Moeen Ali. Let's say England were a little bit crapper than they were. Let's say they were just as good a team, but they didn't have any good players who could bat 5, 6, or 7, right? So instead of having Stokes and Butler and Bairstow and Folks and all these guys who can bat in the same positions, maybe they had a really good top four. Top five is a bit dodgy. Top six, not too good. And their number seven was okay. In that situation, Moeen Ali can bat at number six, right? What would he average? 35? Not that much less than probably what Ben Stokes would average, right? We know at number seven, he averages around 33. I'm just guessing. He averages 35 batting at number six. But if you want to say it's 33 or 32, I'm also more than acceptable with that. At that stage, he gives you so much flexibility because what you have is a number six who's a little bit below par, but still can make hundreds. And you have a number six who can bowl you 40 overs a game if you need it. Right. Yeah, and regular 40 overs a game, probably average 30 overs a game or 35 overs a game because he's the frontline spinner. So Jason Holder, and I wrote about this year, when Jason Holder got really good, he wasn't as important as an all-rounder as Stokes, Jadeja, Shakib or Moeen Ali because he was batting at eight. So that meant that they didn't have an extra bowler in their team because of Jason Holder. As his batting got better and he got more confidence and they moved him up the order, he was of much more use. So he's now much more use as a batter. But also, if he can only bowl 15 or 20 overs a game like Ben Stokes can, right, he's not worth as much as Jadeja or Moeen Ali because they can actually take up more of an end, right? So, you know, the average differential, firstly, it doesn't mean anything unless you have lots of wickets and lots of runs. So, you know, I think, is it Sachin or Alistair Cook? One of them has like one of the best average differentials of all time. No, it's not Sachin, is it? It must be Alistair Cook and there's someone else, right? So you need to take a lot of wickets for it to mean anything. Yeah. You know, so Alan Border, you know, might have a good average differential, but he only took 24 wickets. So it doesn't mean anything at all. But then beyond that, it's also how often you are useful to your team. And then what else you allow your team to do. And I think in that case, Moeen Ali did that. The biggest problem for England was, and this is not Moeen Ali's fault, is that they had about nine guys. I said this once. Wokes, Curran, Butler, Folks, Bairstow. You could almost put Stokes in this as well. All probably great number sevens.
Yeah.
Right? But they were trying to fit a batting order where everyone could bat in the same position. And it's kind of a bit ridiculous. And so Moeen was, you know, pushed out of that, you know, because of that.
Yeah. And I guess the obvious segue from this conversation that you just had with respect to, you know, what makes Moeen unique is also the fact that Moeen has been this ultimate utility cricketer for England over the years. He's been plugging holes left, right and center. He's batted from 1 to 9. He's opened versus Pakistan and the UAE in Test cricket. Currently finds himself at first drop, and that is maybe his more natural position to bat at because he's such a free-flowing left-hander. You know, his cover drives are sight for sore eyes. But originally, you know, if you go back, he was probably picked because he could bowl spin. And funnily enough, that's also why he got back into the team right now, because Jack Leach was injured and then poor guy had to go through the whole callous situation. But just the fact that England probably picked him because they needed some spin bowling resources, I think that he has been like that main problem solver for them his entire career. And that's like something that is quite unique to him, in the sense that if you look at all those other 15 names, you know, in that list of 16 cricketers with that combination of 3,000 runs and 200 wickets, Moeen really is, you know, an anomaly in that regard.
Yeah, everyone else would be probably on one skill alone would be a frontline player, right? So obviously Broad and Warne are, but you know, you look at Pollock, if Pollock couldn't bowl, sorry, if Pollock couldn't bat, it wouldn't have mattered, right?
Yeah.
And you know, even Chris Cairns, who's probably one of the more all-roundery cricketers on that list, probably still plays. Vettori still would have played for New Zealand for 10 or 15 years. I don't think they had a better spinner than him, even as his athleticism waned and he became a little bit more of a defensive bowler. He was still probably, you know, in their ideas. And some of the other guys in that list,
Vass
obviously
was Sri Lanka's best seamer, so you know.
Yeah, Vass was certainly getting in the team. Kapil Dev would have got in the team if he couldn't bat. All those sorts of guys. So Moeen comes at it from a very different angle to begin with. Of why did he get picked for England? So I had seen him play for years, and I always thought he might be an interesting white ball player. You know, batting around 4 or 5, you know, as you said, what'd you say before? Free flowing, you know, that long swing of the bat, very elegant. He had the ability to hit boundaries off balls that other players didn't, which is something I look for in a white ball player. And then suddenly he took a bunch of wickets for Worcestershire, not a truckload, but he started to take more consistent wickets, and England didn't have a spinner that they trusted, right? They probably expected to have quite a few more years of Graham Swann. And that ended. Monty Panesar was having on and off field issues at that point. So they weren't waiting for another spinner, because Monty should have played for another 5 years. And they were keeping Graham Swann's elbow together. But Graham Swann had been dealing with that for a long time. I wouldn't say that they thought that he would overcome it, but I think they thought he could bowl with it, right? And then suddenly I think Swanee was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And he had a lot of issues with it at the end. So suddenly they're looking around and there's no one there. And, you know, we've seen, I think, Australia, New Zealand, we've seen a lot of non-Asian teams kind of do this sort of thing. You know, you go back to Ashley Giles, perhaps, of just like, well, who's a guy who can bat a little bit, who can bowl a little bit, and then hopefully we'll find another spinner when we can, right? And Moeen Ali was, if you watch his fundamental technique, he is a beautiful off-spinner. Right?
Yeah.
But he's a beautiful off spinner who, unlike other off spinners who can bowl that delivery, they have spent 12 years, 15 years honing their best off spinner. And he's a guy who in the nets can bowl the best off spinner you've ever seen, and then a full toss, and then a short ball. And they thought that because of his batting, they could overcome that. And it kind of has, right? Like his bowling average is nowhere near as good as a frontline finger spinner, but he takes, I think he has a better strike rate than, you know, runs wickets per balls than Swann and Nathan Lyon, right?
Interesting.
So he is a genuine elite finger spinning wicket taker. What he is not is a, can do everything. For Ashwin or Swann or Lyon, Harath, those sorts of guys, they can bowl defensive, they can bowl attacking, they can think a player out, they can do all these different things. Moeen Ali can rip the ball, occasionally drift it sideways, and sometimes he will spin the ball back a long way. And because of that, you know, Virat Kohli's going to get bowled, but he's also going to bowl a couple of knee-high full tosses. He's going to drag a few balls down the leg side, and sometimes he's going to have to push the ball out because his action has fallen apart a little bit, because he, it's not as in tune as what a normal finger spinner is by that age. And that's what he was. It's a bizarre collection of skills. In some ways, his best ball is as good as anyone other than Ashwin's in modern cricket as a finger spinner. But his worst ball is, you know, worse than Faf du Plessis, you know, wrist spin.
Yeah.
Faf ball, so that's really bad.
Well, that's an interesting analogy that you make. I really like the fact that you brought up Moeen's Wooster days and when he was picked for England, right? And that's exactly what England looked at. He had started to roll his arm over for Wooster a lot more. And then what's phenomenal is that when he came into England's team, A, he scored that ton with the bat versus Sri Lanka. So all of a sudden, now Moeen Ali was bringing in a whole different skill set. He can do so much more. And then also just the fact that he doubled his wicket-taking success for England as opposed to what he had at Worcester, I think that's quite phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, some of it is because he didn't bowl a lot early on. Mm. But even so, there's no doubt he was a better wicket taker. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and have a look at my notes or, you know, send it George Dobell a text message. But it's about 2 years before he gets picked for England that he starts to take it semi-serious. Mm-hmm. And really, even when he's picked for England, if you talk to him privately, he's saying, I'm not a frontline spinner. I kind of know a few things, but I don't know everything. And so I think it's remarkable that it worked because realistically, you know, so do you remember Marcus North? You would remember Marcus North.
Of course I remember Marcus North. He took a fifer versus Pakistan at Leeds or something. Lords.
I think it was six.
It might have been six.
Yeah. So Marcus North was if he had a beautiful off spinner's technique, probably nicer than Moeen. Didn't spin it as much. Curved the ball away a little bit. Was very accurate with how he bowled. He probably never took off spinner seriously as Moeen Ali did. And he came into the team and they tried to make him into a frontline bowler. And I remember having a conversation with him one day and he was like, because I think I said to him he had the best figures in Shield cricket the year he was picked, which is why they picked him, right? There was no spinner doing better. You might as well just pick a batter who's bowling okay at the moment. And he was like, what? And he knew he was going to have to bowl more for Australia, but he never thought of himself that way and couldn't really do the job. You know, the Pakistan game was, you know, a bit of a fluke, you know, from that perspective. But in general, he wasn't a very good bowler at test level. And he was never supposed to be. That's kind of what should have happened to Moeen Ali. The fact that Moeen Ali continues to get better and better and keep his position in the side as a bowler is, you know, and to a point where, if you look back those first two or three years, they were saying to him, don't think of yourself as a frontline spinner. They weren't doing that because they didn't think he could be a frontline spinner. They were doing that because they were terrified it would break him mentally to suddenly for him to think of himself as a frontline spinner. That's the truth of that situation. And yet he does stick around. And look, it's no one's ever going to say he has a great bowling average because it's high, right? Mm. But he did take a lot of wickets. And it's a weird mix. And I'm sure we'll talk more about how he's not like other spinners later on. But it is a weird mix. But the fact is, it shouldn't have worked at all. If you're like, oh, Moeen Ali's never been any good. He only averages 37 with the ball. I'm like, fine. I would have thought he would have averaged 50 with the ball. He'd never been a frontline spinner at any level of his career until England threw him the ball in test matches and said, try work this out, mate.
Yeah, no, learning on the job definitely is, you know, epitomized by Moeen Ali over here. I know Saqlain Mushtaq had a big role in kind of developing him as a spinner because he had worked with him, you know, with England for quite a while. And and you just alluded to this, so I'll just get right to it. What separates Moeen from pretty much every other off-spinner or even leg spinner for that matter, if you think about it, is that, look, he will have that magic delivery. He is a wicket-taking bowler. His strike rate, as you pointed out, is a good one. But everything else is not working out for him. He doesn't have a good average. He will bowl a half-trekker or a full toss very, very frequently. We've seen that in this Ashes as well. Economical isn't really an adjective that ever comes to your mind when you think of Moeen Ali. And he's someone who primarily relies on that drift or rip that he adds with his finger and does not have a dusra. I mean, Nathan Lyon doesn't have a dusra either. But still, 200 test wickets is no joke.
No, it's not just that he doesn't have a dusra, although you're right. But he doesn't have a particularly good straight ball. Not to say he hasn't got wickets with his straight ball and everything else, but if you compare him to Akshar Patel or Graham Swan, and obviously Ashwin and Jadeja, and Shakib, those are guys who really understand what they're doing and their straight ball is phenomenal. Moeen doesn't have any of those other skills, right? And so it really is that, and you know, you and I talk about this a lot on, you know, the, on all these different podcasts of he's a guy with one particular skill, which is to rip the ball. Everything else, he's improved a little bit how he thinks wicket through. When he first started, he didn't really think it through. And as a batter, this is a weird thing to say, but as a batter, sometimes you have an advantage because you understand what batters want to do a little bit more than what bowlers are just like, why is this? Why would he do that? Because they don't understand batting. So Moeen doesn't understand it from that point of view. But yes, he basically has one delivery, which is a ripping off spinner, and everything hangs off of that. And the fact that he has 200 wickets with one delivery, it really does show you how good that one ball is. And I just want to go back to one quick thing, because I just remembered, I probably should have put this in the piece, but I didn't want to go into Marcus North, because as you know, I went off on a different random tangent, tangent in that. Marcus North, 21 tests, 14 wickets, right? And an average of 42. Average is only 5 more than Moeen Ali, right? The point is, he didn't take many wickets. He didn't bowl that much. He didn't get into it. Moeen Ali took that off spinner and he rode it and he improved little things. He's more accurate now than he used to be when he was young. I should say, if you're watching him in this test series, he doesn't look particularly accurate, but that's more to do with the callus on his finger than anything else. But he's more accurate, certainly, than he was when he was young. Up until very late in his career, I never understood why anyone ever played an attacking shot against Moeen Ali's good ball. Because all you had to do is wait for the half tracker or the one that was down leg side or the full toss. And players were like, we've got to take him down. No, you don't. You can score it 4 runs and over without taking a single risk against him. He's still going to rip one through the gate eventually. You just have to live with that. But players, I thought a lot of his early wickets were donated to him, but he did get a lot better after that.
Yeah, very similar to that Scott Boland conversation that we had, right, with respect to that one stock delivery and everything. But here's the interesting thing, and this was not in your piece either. This is just my observation, and this is more so true of late, not historically. But if you look at his usage maybe in red ball cricket or how England use him in test cricket as that primary spin option, it's not the same way England use him in white ball cricket. You will have a few games in which England don't bowl him at all. So it's interesting that that sort of a bowler in white ball cricket has 200 best wickets, right?
NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live, because you shouldn't have to change teams even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto renews.
Yeah, well, I'll take it a step further. In white ball cricket, he's a defensive bowler. And in red ball cricket, he's an attacking bowler. And that's never made any sense to me. But you go through, he doesn't take many wickets at all in white ball cricket, right? Yeah. And for a long time, he wasn't a defensive bowler in the way that, I don't know, who are some of the great sort of white ball defensive bowlers we've seen come through, you know, those finger spinners, you know, Imad Wasim type, you know, type of ball. He's not that kind of defensive bowler, but he's not particularly easy to get away. He does have a pretty good economy, considering the games that England played on were on very good pitches because they wanted as many runs as possible and everything else. But he just doesn't take many wickets in white ball cricket. And as you said, the other thing is, look at Chennai, look at England. He doesn't get used as a frontline option in white ball cricket. In fact, I would argue that maybe one of England's biggest problems was when they tried to get through 10 overs from him.
Yeah.
He's not a 10 overs guy. And that's what Chennai, I think Dhoni was much smarter to go, no, we'll bowl him against good matchups and we'll bowl him on pitches that suit him. The rest of the time, you know, we've got Jadeja will bowl more overs in this game. Or, you know, Sam Curran will bowl an extra over in this game. Or Shardul will bowl an extra over in this game and we'll get through it that way. That's the best way to use him in white ball cricket. But it's fascinating that he is so different in those two different formats.
Yeah, speaking of white ball cricket, I'll go to the other comparison that you made in your piece. You compared Moeen's selection to Michael Yardy's because Michael Yardy had a fantastic first-class record but was picked for England's limited overs teams, and he was also batting all around the park, you know, no consistent numbers such, and, you know, they relied on his overs for spin. So talk us through that comparison a bit more, because I'm sure the viewers or listeners, they'd want to understand.
I'm sure most people have no idea who Mike Yardy is. So.
Of course they do. How can you forget Michael Yardy? He had one of the quickest spin bowling actions I've ever seen. It's like the Afridi of England in that regard.
So Matt Roller, by the way, calls this the Mike Yardy piece. He's not even interested in with Moeen. He's like, yeah, just give me more Yardy facts. So if you get a chance to tweet to Matt Roller, any of the listeners, remember to give him as many Mike Yardy facts as possible. But so Mike Yardy was a batter, exactly like Moeen, who probably earlier in his career sort of worked out that bowling a little bit of finger spin could be helpful for his team. He wasn't, as you just said, with his bowling, he wasn't like Moeen. He wasn't a traditional finger spinner at all. Maybe more like someone like Colin Miller might be a better, although Colin Miller was a red ball bowler and Mike Yardy was a white ball bowler, but strong seam bowling build, which meant he could bowl very, very quick finger spin, but also was what I would call a spoiler bowler. His whole thing with Mike Yardy was he was going to bowl a ball in a way that you could not score off it, and he ends up becoming very much like a Michael Beer, Imad Wazim type left-arm finger spinner. Strong, clever, puts the ball in difficult situations. So England, he just keeps not getting hit anywhere, right? And eventually England are like, he might be our best option. And I've never talked to anyone in England cricket from that period, but I'm sure they also went, well, he can bat. We bring him in. You know, I think Mike Yardy made 10,000 first-class runs.
Yeah.
You know, bring him in. We've got an extra batter in our lineup. The problem was that Mike Yardy was weirdly terrible at white ball batting. He never had a good career for Sussex in one-day cricket. Might have been slightly better in T20 cricket, if I remember back. But he just never nailed it. He was a much better first-class batter than he ever was that. And so they brought him in, and they didn't know what to do with him because he was clearly a much better batter than, I don't know, let's say, you know, this is in the days when Stuart Broad was, you know, could still hit the ball, right? Do you bat him ahead of Stuart Broad? Well, Stuart Broad in one-day cricket is probably going to get you more runs, you know, and he played with Graham Swan. You know, he played with all these different players. And they were like, where do we fit him in to this lineup? We don't know how to put him in. And so he bats at 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. And it's basically, you could see them going, well, he is a batter, so we'll bat him at 7. But I think his record in one-day cricket was an average of 20 at a strike rate of 69. Like, there's, you know, unless you played in 1975, that's not a good record for a number 7. That's not what you're looking for. So he didn't have power. He wasn't particularly quick, and he didn't average a lot. Like, at least if he averaged 45 doing that, you'd be like, well, at least we know Mike Yardy's never going to go out, and we can tell everyone else to go in and slog around him. They didn't even have that. And I remember, I think it was my memory that he played at number 4 in the one-day team, and they sent him up, and he just looked lost. He didn't, he wasn't a good enough batter in white ball cricket to be in that position. He wasn't a test quality batter. He wasn't far away, but he probably wasn't quite a test quality batter, even a replacement level. He was probably just marginally lower. So I would say Moeen Ali is a better bat than Mike Yardy, and he just looked lost. And so they ended up with this guy who was an all-rounder, but he wasn't. They would have been much better if they just said Mike Yardy could bat at number 9. And then what they could have done is, on wickets when the ball was seaming everywhere or spinning everywhere, that's when you would have thrown him up the order and just be like, can you block out a few overs here and then get yourself out, or we'll run you out. And then we'll bring the other guys back in later. But they never did that, and they couldn't find a spot for him. And I've thought about this with Moeen Ali. I think at Moeen Ali's peak as a bowler, when he did lose confidence in the batter, they were still trying to make him into this batter, but, you know, they stuffed up his batting in many different ways. They would have been better off at times just going, he's a frontline bowler, because they had Ben Stokes. They already had another all-rounder in their team. But instead, they were like so obsessed with Moeen Ali as a batter that they kind of ruined his entire confidence at times.
Yeah, no, and like coming to his batting, if you compare Moeen's batting record at Worcester compared to England, and you look at Worcester, you know, he was averaging in and around 40, whereas for England, he's averaging under 30. Now, we all know that Moeen Ali is a better bat than that. He should be averaging more 30. And maybe you could attribute that to the fact that he has batted at all of these different positions and in a variety of different roles. Would you say that is like the main reason why Moeen Ali averages under 30 in red ball cricket for England?
It's the reason he averages under 30, yes. I think if he'd found one position, whether it be 6, 7, 8 or 9, maybe not 9, that's probably a bit low for him, but if he found one position and batted in it and they had given him 60 test matches in it, he would have worked. He's not an idiot. It's like he worked out spin bowling at the professional level, right? Like, giving one position, even if it's one he wasn't born with. And you got to remember, you talked about his batting. It's worth saying that, you know, he's a number 4, you know, maybe a number 3 in some sides, but he's basically a number 4 in first-class cricket, number 3 in white ball cricket probably. That was what he was from the age of 8. he would have played tape ball games, right, in car parks in Birmingham, and he would have been batting at number three. That you can just watch him and you can see it in the way that he bats. So him then batting in all these different positions, well, if you're not quite, he's probably, again, a replacement level test player. If he never bowled at all, he probably still would have gone into maybe the test side as a batter, but he wouldn't have, I don't think he ever would have been good enough to keep that position for a long period of time. But when you start to say, okay, you're going to bat out of position. Ah, but not only are you going to bat out of position, next test match, we're going to change that position. So you're batting at eight, now you're going to bat at six. Okay. Oh, now we're in Pakistan. Do you want to open? Oh, what about batting first drop? Have you thought about first drop? Yeah. Actually, now we want you in the middle order because of the way that you play spin and you can attack the left arm fingers. It just, he wasn't good enough to do that. And I think if he did it to Bradman, right, you'd probably bring him down from 99. Players like roles. And if they'd said to him there was a particular role, then the number doesn't matter as much. But it wasn't like, oh, you know, this is a good pitch for spin, so we're going to put you up the order. He could go up the order for any random reason in any random test match at any time and then get pushed back at any time because they've got Butler batting as a specialist number seven, which was still one of the weirder things. So, yes, I think the moving is the reason he averaged under 30. He definitely would never have averaged around, I think he averaged 41 for Worcester. Does that sound right?
Something like that.
I don't think he would have got anywhere near that in the test team, but he could have averaged a lot more and been a lot more handy to England consistently had he had a role that they'd given him.
Fair enough. And I think it's really ironic that right now Moeen finds himself at first drop batting in that number three role. And the one that we both mentioned is something that comes more naturally to him and he's more used to at Worcester as well. And the fact that he's here batting in this position or in the England test team in the first place is because Jack Leach got injured and then Ollie Pope got injured is probably the most Moeen Ali thing to happen to him throughout his career because that's been the template, hasn't it?
Yeah, I remember Jeff Lemon went on BBC and he was saying that it was hubris using Moeen Ali at number three. But I don't think England think that there is a they might think there is a better number three out there. I don't think they think there was someone else who could step in and do the role right now without it being an issue while giving them more all-roundedness to their team because then batting him at number three actually allows them to, you know, pick an extra bowler, you know, pick an extra batter, whatever they want to do in that situation. They could have picked Folks if they wanted to once Moeen starts to bat at number three. It gives them incredible flexibility. But as you said, he is a number three. I mean, he's probably a number four. I would say he's at number four. Having said that, I think he averages over 50 batting at three for Worcester and averages about 45 or something batting at number four. So he had the most success in Red Bull cricket in one position, batting at number three. I looked at it a different way anyway, because I thought to myself, I think we might have talked about this before. If he scores 60 runs in that game, he's completely done his job batting at number three. And I'm not sure there's any England batter that I've seen outside the team who would come in at number three against that Australian bowling lineup and score more than 60 runs in a game. If he scores 40 runs, he's done okay. If he's scoring 60 runs, he's done five. If he scores more than that, it's all gravy for England. They weren't going to be getting a lot of runs out of that number three position regardless. Harry Brook clearly didn't want to bat there, right? Harry Brook couldn't have moved any quicker, right? So again, as you said, it's purely by accident. He's in this situation and suddenly Moeen Ali is batting at number three and these things always happen to him. So now, after years of telling him he has to learn how to bat at number seven or number eight, that it's like, hey, how about number three against, you know, Stark, Cummins and Hazelwood?
Yeah, and I mean, it's fitting that he scored a 50 and definitely, you know, provided more value than was expected of him. I think he overperformed in that innings and, well, England will be quite bummed out that there was no result of that game. But anyway, on a closing note, all said and done, you know, even though we've said that Moeen Ali doesn't quite have the same sort of stature as many of the great all-rounders that Test cricket has seen, but you'd have to say that as this perennial contingency player who's plugging all the holes and filling these gaps and making sure there's no empty cavity, just being that sort of resourceful utility player, how much of an impact has Moeen Ali had in England's modern era across formats?
Yeah, I think they didn't have a spinner. So the fact that they found someone who could work it out to a level that at least took wickets at a test level, right? So he took wickets at a level of a good test spinner, gave them something, and then he's batting, even though it hasn't lived up to what it should have. You know, he's still an above average number seven when he bats there, and an average of 28, you know, he has a bigger impact averaging 28 than, I'm trying to think of someone else. If Mitchell Stark's average got to 28, people would still think Mitchell Stark is a tail ender who's averaging 28, right? You know, Vernon Verlander, right? Those sorts of guys. That doesn't mean they can't bat. Whereas when you have Moeen Ali averaging 28, you're still like, this guy can make a test 100, right? He could make a test 100 and it wouldn't be all that surprising. We're not expecting him to, because he doesn't do it very consistently, but he has all the tools available to him to make, you know, multiple test hundreds. And so I think from that point of view, you know, he did what he had to do. And I think there's a big thing in cricket where we look at all-rounders and they have to be great. You can't be a middling all-rounder. And essentially that is Moeen Ali's biggest sin, is that he's a middling all-rounder, right?
Well, he's better than Nathan McCullum, right? That's the other middling all-rounder that comes to mind.
There's heaps of middling all-rounders, right? what's his name? Ashraf, who played for Pakistan.
Yeah, Fahim Ashraf.
Yeah, and what was the guy from, Maharoof from Sri Lanka?
Yeah, Faviz Maharoof, yep.
Oh, I could name you. See, the thing is, you remembered one. Go back through the last 20 years and there's hundreds of them, right? They never stick around. And the reason they don't stick around is because eventually they get found out because they're not very good with bat or ball consistently across all conditions, right? We're talking about Moeen Ali joining a list because of how long he has stayed around. If England had another frontline spinner who was, let's say they had Graham Swann come back, right? And his elbow's great and he's back in the side. Even if he came back into the side, you would have to say that there would have been times when they would have left him out to pick Moeen Ali because of Moeen Ali's batting. Although, to be fair, Graham Swann could bat a little bit, but nowhere near the level that Moeen Ali could, obviously. And that actually what would have happened is they probably would have played them together. That tells you that he is, on his numbers, a bits and pieces player. But on his overall impact, he's a plus player. And I know that that's going to be annoying because that's not how we're trained to look at it. And I'm a perfect example of this. I would say, well, he's not good enough to be a frontline spinner and he's not good enough to be a frontline batter. He shouldn't be in that side. But the truth is that, especially with the other all-round options England have had, he's given them more flexibility and he has been a match winner on both sides of the ball. You can't deny that. We have seen him win the games with bat and ball. And you go to his white ball cricket. Again, he has the flexibility to bat anywhere between 1 and 7. I would say white ball batting, he's probably a better player. And England have made him be this ultra attacking player. So his average hasn't worked as well. And his white ball bowling hasn't held up the way that his red ball bowling has. But he's incredibly important player let's say he's your 12th best player, right? He gives him incredible flexibility in white ball cricket. And look at what he's done for Chennai. This is a guy who, in 2012, if you said he was going to have a 10-year career in Test cricket and be an IPL star, I would have gone, what are you talking about, right? The fact that we're even mentioning his name shows you how good a cricketer he's been. And it's all well and good for people to go, well, he's just a bits and pieces player, whatever. Well, one of the smartest IPL franchises of all time loves him. And one of the smartest Test teams of all time loves him. Does actually tell you about the remarkably unique set of skills that he has. He may not be great at any one, and he's certainly not a great all-rounder, but his ability to morph into kind of whatever you need as a below replacement level spinner, as a below replacement level one-day spinner, as a below replacement level test batter from 1 through to 8. It's remarkable how many different things he can do in cricket, and he may not be great at any one of them. But when you do put that together, what you get is an above average test player. But because we don't look at all-rounders in this particular way, when we look at them as binary, they're basically, I've said this before, I call it the Botham-Pringle continuum. You're either Botham or you're Pringle. Well, I tell you what, there's a lot of middle ground between being one of the greatest players of all time and being someone like Derek Pringle, who actually played for a long period of time. He was not a dud at all. But we go, Pringle's a bust. And Botham's a legend, and there's no other way of looking at it. We don't do it for batters, and we don't do it for bowlers. We only do it for all-rounders, which means that we're looking at the numbers and the usage in the wrong way. And I thought Moeen Ali was a perfect case of that. As you said before, he's a counting stats guy. Well, there's only been a couple of hundred people who've ever made 3,000 runs in Test cricket, and there's been, I think, 80-odd people who've taken 200 wickets. You The fact that he's on either of those lists is remarkable. The fact that when you put them together, he's there with 15 other players, that's a career.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you could probably use the adjective malleable to describe Moeen Ali, because that's, you know, basically what he's done, or the role he's played for England, you know, doing all these different things. And I think that I'll just take this one step further. I think his impact off the field has also been a really, really good one, you know, in that dressing room and adding diversity and all of that stuff. He's a very well-respected character in that dressing room, isn't he?
No, that, I mean, that, I didn't write about that because I didn't write about his white ball cricket. There's a few other, I mean, I could probably write 10 or 15,000 words on him, you know. He's a really fascinating cricketer. But you're right, we just had the ICAC report come out, and you've got, I remember in 2013, there was a documentary maker who was going to make a film. I think it was 2013 or 2014. And he'd been working on Death of a Gentleman with us. No, he hadn't been working on Death of a Gentleman. He'd been working on another film with me. And he was trying to do a film about athletes and their fathers. And I said, get Moeen Ali. And I said, because him and his dad have great stories individually, and they have great stories together as a father and son. And this guy's like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be around. And I went, he's going to be around. He's too good not to be around. And I said, but even if he's not, I don't know if how many other players like Moeen Ali, you know, that, you know, that are going to have the kind of impact that he's going to have in English cricket. You know, I would like to think more Asian players were going to come through, but I think if you have a look at it, I probably wasn't that far wrong. Moeen Ali has ended up being the guy for the last 10 years. Then you talk about the cultural stuff as well. As you said, you know, being a British, you know, Muslim man, you know, the old line that, he, you know, when he retired, he was going to clean the toilets in the I've forgotten the name of, what's the room at the back of the mosque called? Whatever the you know, the changing areas, the people who clean the facilities, not where the shoes go, but the other bit, you know, the bit I'm talking about. You know, that's what he said he wanted to do. Like, that's a humble person. And, like, he's probably a little bit more wicked with his sense of humor and his attitude than maybe he's ever let the media see. I remember watching him quite early on, and he was in a, it was like this weird tennis ball throwing competition with Alistair Cook, and he was swearing at Alistair Cook like you would not believe. But he is a very placid, level head. And look, Ben Stokes and Johnny Bairstow, not particularly that kind of thing. You know, Broad and Anderson, you know, there's a lot of grumpiness and high strung and ego. Moeen Ali's not like that. Just from a character perspective, you need different kinds of people in that environment. And I think, you know, probably coming after the whole, you know, taking over from Swanee, who's a difficult character, you know, KP moving on. Moeen Ali's probably the kind of person that you want to balance everyone else out there. So from many different reasons, I think he's been an incredibly important player for English cricket.
Yeah, and he's also displayed leadership abilities because he's led the limited oversides, you know, as well. But anyway, I just hope, and I'm sure you feel the same, that we get to see a lot more of Moeen Ali in the coming years, be it red ball cricket or white ball cricket, because he has been that sort of cricketer. He might not be a superstar with his numbers, but he's definitely a cricketer that you would never, ever forget. And on that note, let's end this episode of Footmarks. We'll catch you again next week. That's all from our end. I'm Behram Kazi. You can find me at Def Mango on Twitter. That's Jared Kimber. You can find him everywhere at A Jared Kimber. And that's all for now. We'll catch you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are many other extras as well, including a Discord channel. There's a link to those in the show notes. Please review, subscribe, and tell all your friends about our show. Word of mouth is the best way of making our podcast grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bharat Sundaresan and Behram Kazi. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston. Each episode is produced by Ishit Kuberka at Sound Potion Studio. The team from 42 help us out with the video side. Orajoti Senapayu and Maida Akam, both producing podcasts, while Mukunda Bandredi is the head of our YouTube content.
Sports Social Podcast Network.